The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Gregory Stockel, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is John Russell.
Chocolate makers are expected to raise prices this year because of higher costs of cocoa from exporters like Ivory Coast. The West African country is the world's largest cocoa producer. Hershey is the largest producer of chocolate products in the United States. It said last month it plans to raise prices on all of its products because of the rising cost of ingredients. Ingredients are the things used to make a food or product. Demand for chocolate in America increased during the COVID-19 pandemic, and cocoa producers in places like Ivory Coast are struggling to keep up with that demand. Experts say one reason for that is climate change. Harvard University researchers estimate that by 2030, parts of West Africa will be too hot and dry to produce much cocoa. The West African countries of Ghana and Ivory Coast together produce 70% of worldwide cocoa supply. Cocoa farmer Raphael Konan Kowasi recently took VOA to his farm. Huge green and yellow cocoa pods hung from trees. He said his trees are producing less because of rising temperatures and less rainfall than usual. Almost all of the young plants die in the high season. If you have not been able to get water to them, you have no cocoa, Kowasi said. Kowasi receives government assistance in the form of cocoa trees. But he said the government gives out trees at the wrong time of year. Because of this, the young trees have a difficult time surviving. Christian Bunn is with the Consortium of International Agricultural Research Centers, a worldwide scientific organization. Bunn said information about how the climate is changing can inform farmers about how to better care for their crops. What we're seeing is that the onset of both dry and wet season can change. It's less reliable. During the season, there may be breaks in terms of rain during the dry season, or there's a dry spell during the wet season, Bunn said. The data show it may be better for farmers to stop producing cocoa and instead grow a variety of different crops, he said. But the chief of one Ivorian company that supplies the Hershey company said higher prices for cocoa could be welcomed by farmers. Olga Yunu said, "My opinion is that these farmers should have better prices, should earn more, because they work hard. Most are poor," Yunu said. Her wish appears to be coming true. As climate change continues to have effects on production, prices continue to rise. I'm John Russell.
As winter comes to an end, gardeners in northern parts of the world look for signs of life. They look for plants that are growing from roots that were planted in autumn. Many gardeners are looking for the return of leaves to many of their trees. By planting, people can grow plants that keep their gardens interesting to look at even during cold periods. Here are some suggestions for planning an interesting winter garden. First, create a wall in the back of the garden with plants that keep leaves throughout the year. That way, when some plants lose their leaves, the garden will still have structure that provides privacy and interest for the eye. Next, consider how the garden looks from the street. It matters how others see the garden, but the person who sees it the most is the gardener and those who live in the house. Gardeners should consider where they spend most of their time. Do they spend a lot of time looking at one part of the garden? They should study how the garden looks from indoors. When choosing plants, consider how all parts of the plant, from the fruit to the bark, will improve the garden's appearance. Some plants that are interesting to see in the winter do not look very good during the summer. The red twig dogwood, also known as the Cornus alba, will leave a bright red leafless bush in the winter. Another bush that is beautiful in the winter is the American beauty berry, also called Calicarpa americana. It is from the southeast United States and leaves small, bright purple fruits or berries that hang on all winter or until the birds eat them. Winterberry holly is another bush from North America. It has bright red berries in the winter that are just as pleasing for the eyes as they are for the birds. Plant one male for every 6 to 8 female plants to make sure they produce fruit. Trees with beautiful bark can draw people in as well. The bark of the paperback maple peels back to a rich red bark underneath. Another tree, the paper birch, provides 4 seasons of interest. It has beautiful leaves in the fall and beautiful bark that begins to peel when the tree is about 3 years old. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Researchers say they have created a technology tool that uses pig sounds to interpret different emotions the animal is feeling. The tool is based on thousands of recordings collected from more than 400 pigs throughout their lives. The scientists developed an algorithm that seeks to identify a series of emotions the animals could be experiencing. The research may lead to creation of an app that farmers could use to learn the emotional state of animals in an effort to improve their productivity and well-being. An international team cooperated in the experiments that led to creation of the algorithm. The team was led by researchers from the University of Copenhagen, ETH Zurich in Switzerland, and France's National Research Institute for Agriculture, Food, and Environment. The results recently appeared in a study in the publication Scientific Reports. pigs are known for having highly developed vocal skills. The researchers state in the study that pigs make different noises based on what they are experiencing at the time they make the sounds. And these sounds can be linked to different emotions. Emotions are generally caused by the evaluation that an individual makes of its environmental situation, the study states. The study centered on more than 7,000 audio recordings of pigs in different situations, from the time they were born until they died. The recordings were collected in both natural and experimental settings. The team organized the sounds to link them with different situations and activities the pigs were involved in. The behavior of the pigs was observed in both positive and negative situations. Positive situations included when pigs were being fed by the mother or were reunited with family members after being separated. Negative situations included separations, fights between pigs, castration, or being prepared for slaughter. The researchers also studied the pigs in controlled environments. During these experiments, some of the pigs were given different foods and objects while others were not. Behaviors of the animals were followed and pig sounds were recorded, along with notes on their physical reactions. The team examined the recorded material and attempted to identify similarities in the sounds linked to different situations and emotions. The goal was to differentiate positive situations and emotions from negative ones. The researchers said higher-pitched sounds were usually measured in negative situations, while lower-pitched calls were linked to both positive or negative emotions. With this study, we demonstrate that animal sounds provide great insight into their emotions, Associate Professor Elodie Briefer said in a statement. Briefer, with the University of Copenhagen's Department of Biology, was a lead writer of the study. There are clear differences in pig calls when we look at positive or negative situations, Briefer added. She noted that in positive situations, the sounds were far shorter, with few changes in strength levels. On the other hand, lower-pitched grunt sounds usually began high, but then dropped lower. By training the algorithm to recognize the sounds in different situations, the team said it was able to identify the correct emotion 92% of the time. Briefer said that with additional data and training, the algorithm can be a valuable tool for helping to improve the emotional health of pigs and other farm animals in the future. Now we need someone who wants to develop the algorithm into an app that farmers can use to improve the welfare of their animals, Briefer said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The D-Day invasion of June 6, 1944 was the largest amphibious assault in history, and it led to the end of World War II in Europe. Allied forces stormed the beaches at Normandy, France. The invasion marked a turning point in the war in Europe as Hitler's hold on the continent began to crumble. On today's Making of a Nation, we take you back to that event, beginning with a decision by the Allied commander, General Dwight David Eisenhower. On June 5, 1944, a huge Allied force waited for the order to invade German-occupied France. The invasion had been planned for the day before, but a storm forced a delay. At 3:30 in the morning, the Allied commander, General Dwight Eisenhower, was meeting with his aides. The storm still blew outside the building. General Eisenhower and the other generals were discussing whether they should attack the next day. A weatherman entered the room. He reported that the weather would soon improve. All eyes turned toward Eisenhower. The decision was his. His face was serious, and for a long time he was silent. Finally, he spoke. "Okay," he said, "we will go." And so the largest military invasion ever known, D-Day, took place on June 6, 1944. The German leader, Adolf Hitler, had known the invasion was coming, but he did not know where the Allied force would strike. Most Germans expected the Allies would attack at Calais, but they were wrong. Eisenhower planned to strike along the French coast of Normandy, across the English Channel. The Second World War was then almost 5 years old. The Germans had won the early battles and gained control of most of Europe. But in 1942 and 43, the Allies slowly began to gain back land from the Germans in North Africa, Italy, and Russia. And now, finally, the British, American, Canadian, and other Allied forces felt strong enough to attack across the English Channel. Eisenhower had 150,000 men and 12,000 planes for the attack. But most importantly, he had surprise on his side. Even after the invasion began, General Erwin Rommel and other German military leaders could not believe that the Allies had really attacked at Normandy. But attack they did. On the night of June 5th, thousands of Allied soldiers parachuted behind German lines. Then, Allied planes began dropping bombs on German defenses. And in the morning, thousands of ships approached the beaches, carrying men and supplies. The battle quickly became fierce and bloody. The Germans had strong defenses. They were better protected than the Allied troops on the beaches. But the Allied soldiers had greater numbers. Slowly, they moved forward on one part of the coast, then another.
People of Western Europe, a landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force.
General Dwight Eisenhower.
This landing is part of the concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe. I have this message for all of you. Although the initial assault may not have been made in your own country, the hour of your liberation is approaching. All patriots, men and women, young and old, have a part to play in the achievement of final victory. To members of resistance movements, whether led by nationals or by outside leaders, I say, follow the instructions you have received. To patriots who are not members of organized resistance groups, I say, continue your passive resistance, but do not needlessly endanger your lives. Wait until I give you the signal to rise and strike the enemy.
The Allies continued to build up their forces in France. Within 1 week, they brought nearly 90,000 vehicles and 600,000 men into France, and they pushed ahead. Hitler was furious. He screamed at his generals for not blocking the invasion, and he ordered his troops from nearby areas to join the fight and stop the Allied force. But the Allies would not be stopped. In late August, the Allied forces liberated Paris from the Germans. People cheered wildly as General Charles de Gaulle and free French troops marched into the center of the city. The Allies then moved east into Belgium. They captured the port of Antwerp. This made it easier for them to send supplies and fuel to their troops. Only when Allied troops tried to move into the Netherlands did the Germans succeed in stopping them. American forces won battles at Eindhoven and Nijmegen, but German forces defeated British Red Devil troops in a terrible fight at Arnhem. Germany's brief victory stopped the Allied invasion for the moment, but in less than 4 months, General Eisenhower and the Allied forces had regained almost all of France. At the same time, in 1944, the Soviets were attacking Germany from the east. Earlier, Soviet forces had succeeded in breaking German attacks at Stalingrad, Moscow, and Leningrad. Soviet forces recaptured Russian cities and farms one by one. They entered Finland, Poland, and Romania. By the end of July, Soviet soldiers were just 15 kilometers from the Polish capital, Warsaw. What happened next was one of the most terrible events of the war. Moscow radio called on the people of Poland to rise up against the German occupation forces. Nearly 40,000 men in the Polish underground army listened to the call, and they attacked the Germans. The citizens of Warsaw probably could have defeated the German occupation forces if the Soviet army had helped them. But Soviet leader Joseph Stalin betrayed the Poles. He knew that many members of the Polish underground forces opposed communism as much as they opposed the Germans. He feared they would block his efforts to establish a new Polish government that was friendly to Moscow. For this reason, Stalin held his forces outside Warsaw. He waited while the Germans and Poles killed each other in great numbers. The Germans finally forced the citizens of Warsaw to surrender. The real winner of the battle, however, was the Soviet Union. Both the Germans and the Poles suffered heavy losses during the fighting. The Soviet army had little trouble taking over the city with the help of Polish communists. And after the war, the Free Polish Forces were too weak to oppose a communist government loyal to Moscow. Adolf Hitler was in serious trouble. Allied forces were attacking from the west. Soviet troops were passing through Poland and moving in from the east. And at home, several German military officials tried to assassinate him. The
The German leader narrowly escaped death when a bomb exploded in a meeting room. But Hitler refused to surrender. Instead, he planned a surprise attack in December 1944. He ordered his forces to move quietly through the Ardennes forest and attack the center of the Allied line. He hoped to break through the line, separate the Allied forces, and regain control of the war. The Germans attacked American troops, tired from recent fighting in another battle. It was winter. The weather was so bad that Allied planes could not drop bombs on the German forces. The Germans quickly broke through the American line. But the German success did not last long. Allied forces from nearby areas raced to the battlefront to help. And good weather allowed Allied planes to begin attacking the Germans. The battle ended by the middle of the following month in a great defeat for Hitler and the Germans. The German army lost more than 100,000 men and great amounts of supplies. The end of the war in Europe was now in sight. By late February 1945, the Germans were forced to retreat across the Rhine River. American forces led by General George Patton drove deep into the German heartland. To the east, Soviet forces also were marching into Germany. It did not take long for the American and Soviet forces to meet in victory. The war in Europe was ending. Adolf Hitler waited until Russian troops were destroying Berlin. Bombs and shells were falling everywhere. In his underground bunker, Hitler took his own life by shooting himself in the head. Several of his closest aides also chose to die in the Führer bunker. One week later, the German army surrendered to Eisenhower and the Allies.
Yesterday morning at 2:41 a.m. at General Eisenhower's headquarters, General Jodl, the representative of the German High Command, and of Grand Admiral Dönitz, the designated head of the German state, signed the act of unconditional surrender of all German land, sea, and air forces in Europe to the Allied expeditionary forces and simultaneously to the Soviet High Command.
British Prime Minister Winston Churchill.
Hostilities will end officially at 1 minute after midnight tonight, Tuesday, the 8th of May. We may allow ourselves a brief period of rejoicing. Today is Victory in Europe Day. Long live the cause of freedom.
The defeat of Germany was cause for great celebration in Britain, the United States, and other Allied nations. But two facts made the celebrations less joyful than they might have been. One was the discovery by Allied troops of the German death camps. Only at the end of the war did most of the world learn that the Nazis had murdered millions of innocent Jews and other people. The second fact was that the Pacific War had not ended. Japanese and American forces were still fighting bitterly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.